Welcome back. This is episode 12 of the podcast. And this week we're discussing the future of my YouTube channel, the future of the podcast, because this is the final episode of this season. Will CGI or design work be replacing photography, and a bit of the in-depth on that, because obviously my work is very much similar to sort of CGI styled stuff. And then for a final, we're going to go over the biggest issues I see photographers making, because I work with a lot of photographers on a one-to-one basis. I represent photographers. I'm very involved in photographers, being one myself as well. And there's four things that I've realized that pretty much everybody I speak to has at least one, if not all of these, if they're struggling as photographers. And I'm joined yet again by Rob Gurney.
Howdy.
And yeah, so Rob, this is the final episode of the season.
I know, we've made it to 12 episodes. Yep. Can you believe it?
I didn't have a plan to do 12, but I feel like we've sort of hit a roadblock. The roadblock being money. I believe we're making a slight loss each week on this.
Pretty much. And when you say we, you mean yourself.
I'm making a slight loss each week making these podcasts. So we're calling it a day on this episode until I work out a financially viable way to carry this forward. There's two options at the moment that I see. One is that I push my Patreon. For those that know, I do have a Patreon, but I don't really like to ask the viewers to be chipping in. Like, it only works if you guys pay. And the other is to find a channel sponsor, which is something we'll be actively searching next week to try and fund this. Because there's two things. We get one Saturday every other week where we can play catch up. And currently we're playing podcast, which is great fun. And it's worked well because I've not been shooting for a very long time for personal reasons. So because of that, this has worked great, but work is about to start again. And in two Saturdays' time, there will be no time to make a podcast, and I can't be doing it and making a loss. It needs to be making a decent amount of money, I think.
Well, it needs to be worth your time, because time is precious.
And I think we'll be able to, I don't think we'll have a problem getting a sponsor, because we're getting 60,000 views in the first 10 episodes, which is not a small number of very specific audience.
Yeah, and you're starting to gain a bit of traction on the actual podcast forums, like sort of iTunes and Spotify.
Yes.
And so we're gaining traction there as well. So.
Yeah, that was much slower to pick up. I assumed that would just be like easy, but apparently YouTube is actually the biggest podcast platform. But yes, that's where we are with that. Now, I do have a plan going forward. It will be a different format. It'll be much more professionally done, I think is the best way to put it. We will have guests on every week. And there'll be like a clear format. There'll be like a gear section, a creative section, a business section. And we'll cover these off each week. But for now, we're going to give it a bit of a rest until I financially work out how I'm going to stop losing money and time every weekend. Which, I don't know. I don't know if you have any sudden bright ideas that I've not even thought of to make this work. But
no, I mean, I was sort of dragged into this. As you know, I'm normally like the dirty little secret that nobody sees. So for me to actually be on camera for, I think, 10 of the 12 episodes,
yep,
is an extremely unusual thing for me.
Yeah, yeah. A bit of a different day's work.
Yeah.
I oddly find this more tiring than doing computery work. Yourself, does it make any difference? Or
this is sort of different to everything else I do. I'm normally sat behind a computer.
Yep.
And this is a rare thing where I just get to sit next to you and chat and react to whatever the topics are, because of course I'm never warned ahead of time.
There's no preparation here. This episode has been planned whilst the previous one was being edited. The edit was coming to an end. I was like, better get this next one planned. If we do another season, it will be considerably better. And you might have noticed last week's one, we upped the editing quality, we have chapters, we have an intro, we've bleeped out all the swear words. It sounds like if you swear, then your video just tanks. So rather than trying to stop swearing, which is apparently impossible for me, we just bleep them out.
Yeah, I think I've made it this far without cursing once.
Yeah, it's not going to happen for me. It's hard enough doing YouTube videos, the short ones. So I have to do lots of retakes. But the YouTube channel is changing as well. So I started the YouTube channel in 2019, I think.
Yep.
On a 5D Mark II with a Rode mic on its hot shoe.
Yeah. The NT2.
I don't know, the little shotgun.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you have to turn it on for it to work, which is a real design fault because there was many muted silent videos. It's a bit Charlie Chaplin on some days. And I've not really assessed what we're doing going forward for a while, and that has been something I've had time to do. and I'm going to change the format of 50% of my videos, which may be a bit high risk. So I'm going to stick to one talking head a week, and then I'm going to do one bigger, more creative video production.
Yeah.
As often as I can. Might not be once a week. It might take 2 weeks to do each one. And then ideally, if we can get the podcast financially viable, then we'll get one of those in each week as well. It'll be a two to three video week, I think.
Yeah.
Which is good, I believe. I don't know. Well, what photography YouTubers do you watch?
Almost none, I'll be honest.
Yeah, same. I don't really know what other people are doing.
Well, the current trend is quitting YouTube.
To be fair...
They're all doing I've been doing this for so long and now I don't want to do it anymore. When I started, I thought it'd be the best thing to be a full-time creator without realising how stressful that is.
I think I'm quite lucky in that it's not stressful for me because I don't rely on it for my income.
No, it's very much a supplementary.
Yes.
And a lot of the channels that I sort of used to follow have kind of gone by the wayside, where they went full U-time YouTubers.
Yeah, I think I'd struggle with that. I mean, at the moment, it makes a full-time income, but I don't have the pressure because I have two other jobs.
Full-time income for somebody making YouTube videos without the expenses of a studio and the cost, the overhead you have from the commercial side of your business.
Actually, all of this is in my YouTube business. This doesn't belong to me as a photographer anymore, any of the studio. I've sold out. It's all a YouTuber studio now because I don't do jobs here. All my jobs are in London. I don't use the camera kit here. That's all in London. It's all rental stuff. So this is actually all funded by YouTube nowadays, which means my photography is far more profitable than it ever was.
Yes, of course.
And the YouTube's slightly less profitable than it ever was. This is my YouTube studio now. And we don't really do much else in here.
If we're back for season two, it'll likely be in the new build.
The new build of the YouTube studio should also be a rental studio for people to come and shoot in and perhaps use some of my fancy gear.
Yeah.
Don't know how I feel about that yet.
I mean, it's something you've been planning for a while, and I think you have to trial it and see, A, what the interest is, and B, what kind of people come to book a studio.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be very picky on who I let in. They're probably like one booking a year. Well, like you can come and have a play.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Yeah, so we'll see. But that's where that's all going. I just need to reassess. I think everyone should reassess their business now and again and how they're spending their time, just to make sure that they're actually getting what they want out of what they're doing, because you can become very busy very quickly without actually achieving what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, it's like all things, it's easy to get on the hamster wheel and keep going.
Yeah.
But every so often you have to step off.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I got offered a book deal recently. Did I mention this to you?
No, it's the first of it.
I can't say much about it.
Breaking news.
I got offered a book deal and I was like, yeah, absolutely. And then I was like, I am really dyslexic. This is going to stress me out. And I looked at how much money it was. It was a decent chunk. I just said no. I was like, this is not what I want in my life. And I think I'm saying no to a lot more things now. Unless it's literally serving what I need, then.
But you only have to look at the amount of demands on your time. Especially with Theodore Barksville over there.
Yeah, good pups.
The puppy's now taking up a lot of time that he already didn't have.
Yes, I've just been out for a puppy training class between podcasts in which he was interesting, I think is the way to put it. He was definitely interesting.
He's a character.
Let's just say that. He's a friendly dog. Lots of the dogs there were very nervous around other dogs. Teddy had the opposite issue. He wanted to meet everybody all the time, all at once. It was a nightmare, but he's a good guy. There's not enough hours in the day, and we're already working weekends.
Yeah, so there comes a point you have to say no to things.
Yeah, and I think financially I don't need to do the extra work anymore, so I think we're just going to start just doing what I want to do.
Yeah, which is important.
And seeing how badly that affects me financially.
Well, I guess because obviously we're in a sprint to the finish for your financial year, so.
Yes, yeah, we are a bit. We're sort of like, I mean, it's weird because it's August, so no one's here. You can't do any marketing at the moment. It's pointless. There's no shoots going on. So we just sort of all sat around twiddling our thumbs. My agent phoned me up the other day. He was like, just making sure you've not killed yourself. And I was like, no, I'm good. And he's like, oh, have you got work on? I was like, no.
but this is at least giving you the time to sort of plan your next moves.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the flip side of it is if you have too much time, especially for me, I overthink things. And then I just, you know, end up with like choice paralysis almost. But yeah, so that's what's going on with YouTube and the podcast. There will be some changes. There have been some changes already, which are part of the changes, but we just need a little bit more dead time to actually finesse. But there was a really great question, and I've seen this as a comment a few times on videos, and you do CGI, don't you?
I do.
So people are going, why would anyone book you when they can just CGI the same thing? Now, I actually passed this on to a client of mine who's a very big client. I won't name them because I don't want to put them on the spot. And the reason they chose me over CGI is down to two factors. One is cost. Photography at the same level as CGI is cheaper.
Yep.
What most people don't realize is you can get cheap CGI, but good CGI, not cheap. And photography is quicker because good CGI takes ages.
Takes time.
Like we can bash through 10 shots in a day. They can bash through one shot in a week.
Yeah.
What's your experience with this? You do... Well, explain what you
do. Yeah, I mean, I do everything from the building the models then to texturing, lighting, whatever it happens to be. So all of these things take time, depending on how complex the model you have to build is in the first place. And then you've got to apply the textures to it in the right place and get all that sort of set up and working correctly. Then you set your scene up like you would do a studio. You know, you'll put a wall in, a floor, overhead lights, whatever. You know, you basically will build it inside a computer in the same way that you would go about creating the set here.
Yep.
On the set. And then the time it takes for some of that can be quite lengthy depending on the complexity of the model. Like, for example, if you've got like a whiskey bottle that says Johnny Walker or something along those lines, and it's got the names all textured in the glass and it's all embossed, and you know, you've got to get every single detail out because it has to look exactly like the real item.
Yep.
So, you know, there you are with your little calipers and you're measuring everything and, you know, you're modelling that. I mean, it can take, you know, 3 to 4 days just to build that model, mm-hmm. Depending on the complexity of it. So straight away, you know, you're already 3 days ahead because you've taken a real one and shot it.
Yeah, retouched it in a day.
While I'm still catching up building the model. And then, of course, you know, even with the greatest, it almost every time a render can be spotted over a real product. There's just something about... Even, you know, with the best of render engines and what have you, that it just has a look to it.
This is another point that they brought up, actually. So they liked the imperfections in my photographs over a render. And because everything's so fake, so AI, so is it real? They want people to know it's real. And even on like labels, they like the flaws in the printing to be shown in the label. While they, like, if your CGI is just perfect,
yeah, because it's perfect every time.
Yeah,
and probably to state the obvious, but the main reason someone would book yourself over CG is to make what they want. I have to have an extremely clear brief. It's the creativity that's missing.
Yeah,
you're doing exactly what somebody's asked you to do. But in your case, people come to you looking for the spark of creativity, the idea. So we've got a concept for something. What do you think we can do? And so, well, this would suit you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the intangible, the difference between booking a photographer and just a CG artist.
Yeah, and I think the gap between CGI and photography becomes bigger the higher up you go.
Yeah, for sure.
Or the difference more. Like, yeah. Like an averagely, well, to be honest, a bad photographer. I'd go for bad CGI over bad photo.
And I think it now sits in two distinct camps. Is if your advertising campaign is predominantly stills, you know, billboards, buses, that sort of thing, real is the way to go.
Yeah.
I think it's probably fair to say that. If it's moving pictures, however, now, there's things you can do in CG that are impossible to do in the real world. You know, when you're flying inside bottles and all sorts of things, that just can't be done in real life. So that makes sense then to have spent the extra money, the extra time to have the models built, because once you've got all that set up, it's fully animatable.
Yeah, it's the same in sport, actually. They make models of humans so they can test out different positions and different equipment and stuff. Which is great because it saves a lot of time for the athlete coming out of training. But then the athlete turns up and goes, yeah, but that hurts. It's like, well done on building the perfect mathematical model, but that hurts.
Yeah. Now they've got a comfort issue.
Yeah. So that's why I thought it was an interesting question because it asks so often. So obviously it's something people... I mean, like for a long time before the AI fit, everyone was terrified CGI was going to take over. CGI is not going to take over. Neither is AI. They're different tools.
Yeah, of course. And again, it's just another tool. I mean, again, if you take... as I say, some of your photographs where we've gone full plastic fantastic on the retouch at the end.
Yeah.
It at first glance looks like CG.
Yeah.
Because everything's so so crisp, so sharp, so perfect. It almost looks like CG, even though it all originated from a real photograph.
Yeah, I think so. And it's keeping... I like the look of CGI in a real way. And I think that good like merge of editing techniques is what builds the look of my work.
Yeah.
Rather than just what I do in camera. So don't panic, people. We're all going to be okay. But some people aren't going to be okay. And this is the biggest issues that I've seen photographers having. And for context, I mentor a lot of photographers. And we've had mixed success. And I'm always very clear on this. Like people are like, if I sign up with you, will I be able to get a big ad campaign or an agent? I'm like, hell no.
You can never guarantee that.
That is not how it works. I can tell you what you need to do. And there's a couple of things. One is people don't do what they're told, which is infuriating. And two, some people just don't have the ability, which is an awkward conversation to have. But it is one I do have when that is the case, because I think it's, and my girlfriend had a go at me. She's like, I can't believe you just said that to that person. She overheard one of my Zoom calls. I was like, well, I don't want to tell them they can do this and they ruin their lives trying to pursue something they don't have the ability to do. I don't think that's very ethically fair.
No, because you become a snake oil salesman at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm pretty much like, yeah, mate, just don't leave your day job. Like, this is not for you. Or, yes, you can do this, but you've got to go and do these steps. Here's what I see people messing up on. And the first one, Rob, I think you'll have experience in both working with me and working with your other job. So it's called scope creep, or I call it scope creep. And it's where a client says one thing, and then on the shoot day, they're sort of going, can we add this? And it is your job to say, no, we cannot. Or to say, yes, but you're going to lose this. Or, yes, let me work out the price for doing that as well. Most photographers end up in these hellish cheap jobs, doing editing for months, because of scope creep.
And it's usually the one you've done cheap that always bites you in the backside.
Always. That's why I don't do cheap jobs anymore, because they're always a pain. We had a client a few years back and they were a nightmare for this. Just always a nightmare. It comes to editing. It's like we've only got one day of editing. You've now got 12 photos. What do you want?
like all things, it all has to be costed.
Yeah.
And it's... I don't know if it's a photographer problem per se, but probably it's more lack of experience.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like certain things along the way, like for example, when I started out, following yourself, you know, you were a good couple of years ahead of me. It's like I was speaking to you, and I'm like, how do you price yourself? He's like, well, looking at what you're doing, you need to be charging this much. I'm like, no, do that.
Yeah.
You know, and again, because you feel, you know, imposter syndrome is real.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. You know, when you're starting out and you get offered some paid work and you feel like a bit of a fraud and you don't think you should be doing that, or, you know, you're happy that you've got the job and, you know, you've done the Richard Branson, now you've got to figure out how you're going to do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
You know, so that's a problem. And it's the same thing here. When you start working, especially in the commercial world, of course, you know, and you're happy that, oh my God, I've been booked by an agency to do this, and this could lead to all sorts.
Yeah.
You almost feel like you can't say no, because you want to get your foot in the door.
Yeah, and I think, again, there's a lot of that going on at the start, and it's not just scope creep, it's undercharging for the scope, you know, and it's like you're doing way too much for too little money, and then you realise it's no longer a viable business, because they're getting paid. The amount of work you'd have to do to make a living doesn't leave you enough hours because of the scope of these projects.
Yeah, and if you're only pricing it based on the job, now, again, the concepts of usage, which we've talked about numerous times, if you take that out of the equation,
yeah,
you need to be charging a lot more for the actual shooting. But again, people just think, well, I want to charge this much a day. It will take me this many days. It's this much. And you say, okay, well, what about the rest of your working week now that you're doing nothing for? You know, you've got to... you know, build a salary into all this, as well as obviously managing your costs and so on.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. But rather than looking at it as a piecework basis, on the assumption you'll be working 5 days a week or so, isn't always the case.
No, exactly. It's especially in the current climate, it's very much not the case. And I guess the flip side of this is the biggest reason I see photographers failing, and that's overspending. Now, we mentioned earlier that all of this is now my YouTube channel. Well, it's not actually. There's a bit of a mix at the moment because I didn't know how to transfer certain things over. It seemed very complicated, so I just didn't bother. So some assets are here, some assets are there, but like stills and videos are still a bit separate in terms of equipment. But buying too much kit, spending too much on kit is one of the biggest things I see people doing. Getting a studio before you can afford it. Like getting a studio when you're not flush, because this is a huge financial tax having this place.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, we've often come across the size of your electricity bill alone. Oh
gosh, yeah, that's crippling. The electric bill's huge. The rent's not too bad, but it's substantial.
It's a significant number.
Yeah, and we're about to double that, having double the size. Yeah. So that's going to go up considerably. So yeah, it all adds up. It's all very much adding up. And people don't take this into consideration. They spend way too much. They think they need new lights. They think they need new this. They think they need new that. You know, you don't. Most of the time, it's sat around doing nothing.
Yeah, and then there's also the one, especially when you've gone from you know, sort of being an amateur photographer moving into the professional world, because you've moved from sort of camera club ethos, where it's your hobby, yeah, and it's perfectly fine to spend money on your hobby because that's what we do. And then, but you can't follow that through to the commercial world where, oh, I've got a 5D Mark III and the Mark IV's come out. Well, obviously I need to upgrade. Well, you don't, because it's practically the same camera, bar a few little minor tweaks here and there. You know, and again, spending an additional $4,000 to $5,000 on that newer camera doesn't make you any more money.
Yeah,
doesn't push you anything forward in terms of the quality of the work you can produce with it. So why spend it? Because you feel good about it, because I've got the latest and greatest.
Yeah, I see a lot of photographers saying, oh yeah, but my competition have it. It's like, your competition are probably going bust. Don't.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, look at the call over the last 4 years for
you
know, reasons that we can't mention on this channel.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So a lot of the photographers who I look up to who are better than me have the same kit or worse kit than me. A lot of the photographers beneath me have much better kit. There's definitely a point where you just go, well, it doesn't really matter. Like in the last episode we were discussing, do I use a Fuji or a 5DS to shoot? Like, do I shoot medium format, 16-bit RAW, or a 5DS camera for my new portfolio? What's easiest to shoot on? Not what's better, what's easiest?
Well, the Canon, obviously.
Yeah, because it works. And also it has a viewfinder and not a computer screen. I'm going to try both, but I know I'll prefer the Canon. I like shutter slap and I like seeing through a lens.
Yeah.
They're two things which are good. It'd be great if camera companies started making DSLRs again.
Gone.
I know.
Gone forever, never to be seen again.
They've gone too far with the new lenses.
You know, we're relative dinosaurs on that front, but I think most people will agree they prefer an optical viewfinder, but you're never going to get one in a DSLM.
No. I reckon the Canon 5D Mark IV is probably a pretty good purchase.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the best evolution of that.
Yeah. Oh, 1DX. I've always wanted a 1DX.
1DX. I mean, they're great. You can use them as a doorstop.
Yeah.
You know, they're useful for all sorts of things. You know, and I say, if you need something absolutely bulletproof, that would be the one.
Yeah.
And you probably pick up the Mark II, which was, again, fantastic camera, for not a lot of money now. I'd be shocked if they were, like, much over a grand.
Yeah, I'd imagine about grand 1500, aren't they? Yeah, people overspending is one of the biggest things I see. And here's a great, let's work out my stats on this. So for the five people this year who I've managed to get an agent for, six if you include somebody who I've just signed to the Futures at Agent at Large, none of them own a new mirrorless camera. They all own old DSLRs or film cameras. None of them own anything remotely modern. You know, one of them was a Micro Four Thirds, I think.
Wow, yeah.
Two of them are on Micro Four Thirds. I think so. It's like a Fuji camera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or maybe it's APS. I don't know. APS-C.
APS-C, could be.
Maybe not Micro Four Thirds. Anyway, they were like little tiny, you know, fun cameras. But they all got signed. Didn't affect their world, you know. But lots of people I see with Hasselblads, Phase 1s, R5s, Z9s.
Yeah, but in the same way that, you know, the people with the best cars aren't the best drivers.
No, that's true.
That's often the reverse is true. People with, you know, the fancy car often drive like total idiots.
Well, yeah, that's also true. I think if you, statistically speaking, if you want to get an agent, you should currently be shooting with it. It's like a Fuji X-T. Or a Canon 5D Mark III. That is the only cameras photographers have owned that I've managed to get agents for. I think it's interesting that it's that short of a tight of a scope.
Because again, it's down to the mindset of the person behind the camera as well.
Yeah.
Because they haven't put the money into the belief that if I buy the better camera, I'll be better at my job. That they've understood that what you need to do is be more creative and be original and do the work. The camera's just a tool. It's just a capture device.
And apparently at the moment, we want us to be very demure.
Yes.
Cutesy. But yeah, so yeah, you know, and I think we waste a lot of time researching equipment. I don't remember the last time I researched a camera.
No, and again, that comes back to the going moving from hobbyist to professional, yeah, because that's what you do as a hobbyist, because that's your hobby, and people like to do that sort of thing.
Your hobby is a camera.
Exactly.
Now, you know, your job is making an image.
Exactly. You know, it's like the same thing. When you decide you want to start playing music, you've got no plans to do it professionally, but you just want to, you know, learn to play a guitar, and you spend months, weeks, you know, looking at different guitars and different pickups and all these things. And then once you become, you know, good at your craft and you join a band, whatever, like Slash, you could give him a £99 guitar from the swap place down the road, and it will sound like $1 million.
Yeah.
You could give the, you know, me, for example, Slash your guitar, and it will sound awful.
Yeah.
That I can guarantee you.
Yeah. I think it's an easy trap to fall into, but you need to get out of it. Now, the next one is non-specific portfolios. You've got to be fixing a problem. You've got to be the person who does a thing. Now, you don't have to be as niche down as I was when I did food like pop art. Pretty much that was it.
Mm-hmm.
I have branched out considerably since then. So the way that I got noticed, and I think this is important because it was a conscious decision. I was going to shoot just food, not food and drink, just food in one style, because it's easier to get noticed doing that.
Yeah, and you become the go-to guy if somebody needs that.
Yes. Then I added drinks in the same style, like creatively the same style, but new subject matter added to the mix. Because, well, drinks go with food, why not? Then after drinks, we added product, because drinks come in a bottle. You can also have a bottle of bleach, don't drink that. But, you know, you start to expand. And now we're shooting the people portfolio, because I can also make people look like my food shots.
Yep.
Now everything's tied together, and I'm known for the style of work I create, not the subject I photograph. But I do think it's much easier if at the beginning you just shoot one subject matter in your style.
Yeah, and like all things, you could train, for example, 12 different martial arts at once, or you could just do boxing.
Yeah.
And you become really good at boxing because your time isn't divided by all these other disciplines. And I think the same thing is true of photography. You know, hone your craft at one thing that you enjoy, because you have to.
Absolutely.
You need that to motivate you. Otherwise, what are you even doing it for? And then just, you know, spend your time getting very, very good at that. And then once you've hit that plateau, the black belt of that style of photography, then you can start to branch out of that.
Yeah, and I think my strong suit will always be my still life work. Mm. But I can also do portraits. And a lot of people go, oh, yeah, but I can also do this. It's like, yeah, we'll get known for one thing first. It's easy to go, well, Scott's doing all those things. And it's like, yeah, but I am in the position I'm in doing all those things when I started out. And even when I was a portrait photographer before then, I shot portraits in a pretty specific style.
Yeah.
There wasn't much change between...
No, which is what brought me onto my radar, was that, again, it was just... You know, you'd only see like one image from every so often, but it would always, of all the images you're trawling through on Facebook, it always stood out.
Yeah.
And you know immediately, because you're also big on never watermarking your photos. You're like, Lightroom's photo. You know, and everybody else was kind of like, you know, slapped Joe Bloggs photography all over their images. You know, and you were like, no, because, and you knew straight away, you're looking at it, I was like, I know immediately who shot that.
Yeah, you shouldn't need a watermark in a photograph. Watermark's never helped anybody. You can remove it in seconds if you want to steal it. Like, seconds.
Yeah.
And nobody's ever looking at the watermark and then Googling you. That's not happening. You're better off just to have a style where people go, oh, yeah, that's Rob's work.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. I don't know. Watermark's bane. I mean, I did use watermarks when I started out. Probably took me 4 or 5 years to realise it was a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, you got over that by the time I met you.
Yeah, definitely had done. When I shot film at the very beginning, I didn't do them because I didn't know how to do them. Then Lightroom had a bit we could export to.
Yep.
I did use them. I mean, the photos were rubbish. Now there's photos of my name stamped on them. I was like, oh, gutted. But
it runs back to the same thing again. It's if you become the jack of all trades, how do people know that you're the person they need to do their job?
Exactly. It's, you know, like I was saying earlier, I don't know if it was in this podcast or when we were just chatting, I'm looking for a thumbnail designer.
That was before this.
So I'm looking for a thumbnail designer, not a graphic designer, not someone who can use Photoshop, but someone who understands what makes a good thumbnail with a good CTR.
Yeah.
Because that's what matters. So I need a thumbnail specialist. People are like, that's ridiculous. Why would you have someone who just, because it makes money.
Yeah. And they understand it. It's the same way that, you know, anybody can use Grammarly and whatever, but someone that really, for your website, really understands SEO and everything else, that's a whole different thing, because that's their...
Because either of us can... Well, I've been making all my own thumbnails for a while, but either of us can make a thumbnail.
Of course.
But neither of us are thumbnail designers.
No, neither of us actually truly understand what YouTube wants from a thumbnail. Yeah,
whereas a thumbnail designer, they get it, and that's the person you want for the job. You know, so far I've had loads of photographers going, I know how to use Photoshop. I'm like, brilliant, so do we. Like, we need a thumbnail designer, like someone who understands how many words you can have on a thumbnail without it being too busy. Yeah.
Where the to placement, put the font type, you know, all these things matter. And it's, you know, what does the algorithm say that, and it's something you really need to understand, because these things as well are always in flux.
Yeah, they change all the time. My thumbnails have to change every now and again. I'm like, these no longer work. We need a new design.
Yeah. And you can see that if you just trace the channel.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, you can't, like, if you want to make YouTube a business, you don't make a video and then come up with a title and a thumbnail. You make a title and a thumbnail and then make a video.
Yes, you go and make the video based on that.
If you can't package it well, it doesn't matter how good the information is, no one will ever see it. You've got to package it and then make it, which took me a good couple of years to understand.
Yeah, and you can't just keep hitting the clickbait titles every time, because people start to know that's what you are.
Exactly, and it's really difficult. It's quite an art to it. So I also want someone to write my titles, because I struggle with those a lot. Trying to explain a complex subject matter, which I'm talking about, for 8 minutes and 6 words, and it being like, it's also got to be what, when people read it, often what I talk about, people don't know exist before they read it. So I've got to get them into the video to give them the information, but in a way that they understand they need the information. It is quite a tricky...
Yeah, especially when it's, you know, quite a nuanced sort of...
Yeah, if I was doing like iPhone reviews, it'd be really easy. But explain to someone, you need to watch this video because I'm going to explain something to you really boring that's really important.
Yeah.
It is not the one. So we could do with that. Now, the last thing that really holds photographers back is bad taste. I'm not talking about their physical taste buds. I'm talking about what they think looks good. You must see this out there in the wild.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to say two words. Selective colour.
Yeah, I did an advert with selective colour once, and the client sent me the tear sheets. But I thought you'd like these. And I was like, no, I would not.
No, I remember stumbling across a wedding photo on Facebook that one of my friends had posted, and it was all black and white apart from the blue ties, and nobody's looking at the people, everyone's looking at the tie.
So Elton John did a video in the late 1980s with selective colour, and that was the last time it should have been used.
Sin City, I'd argue. I think it worked for that,
because again, coming from the comic book world,
just for the red splashes, but almost never. I mean, and I say that's the only time I thought it was justified. No, do it one or the other, colour or black and white. Don't try and mix both.
But I mean, in terms of bad taste, though, it comes down to lots of things. And we were discussing some of these earlier. And it's like, it's not just, is the image good? It's, did you choose to photograph the right thing? So we're talking about people for my portrait series.
Yep.
The person I choose to photograph, I could photograph any person, it'd be a nice photograph. But the people in my portfolio, they have to look a certain way. And I won't know until I see them. So finding these people is so important to the portfolio. Like, the subject is everything. If I can't get the right subject matter, there's no point in taking a photograph just of a pretty person. Like, it does nothing. It serves nothing. So having the taste to go, do you know what? I'm not going to photograph a Fanta orange can. It doesn't work in my line of work. What would be better would be this. Or I'm not going to photograph these sorts of meals. I'm going to do this instead. And choosing what you put in front of the camera is part of the taste. It's not just how you photograph then the Fanta can you choose to do or whatever. Is also what you choose to take a photograph of is really important.
Yes.
The same video, isn't it? Like,
exactly the same thing. You know, you're drawn to certain actors because, you know, they're quite charismatic and you know, they have a bit of weight to them. You know, I mean, the classic Morgan Freeman, for example.
Yeah.
You know, he's great in almost anything. You know, you'd struggle to find a bad movie that he was in. Denzel, another one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although I suspect, and I haven't seen it yet, but Gladiator 2 looks like it could be that movie for Denzel.
Yeah, that's a risky maneuver, that one is.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he's good in it, even though the movie will likely be terrible.
Yeah. But yeah, I think like bad taste is a huge one. It's a really difficult one to fix as well. Trying to explain to somebody, because I was like, well, it's all subjective, you know, what I think is good and what you... No, it's not all subjective. That photograph sucks. Like, that's a really hard conversation to have and to try and explain to somebody that their taste is wrong.
I mean, and that goes not just for photography, but all sorts. I mean, as you know, I'm not the world's snappiest dresser.
Likewise.
For example, you know, but there's people that, you know, they're always very nicely presented, looking sharp, you know, because, again, they understand fashion and what goes together.
Absolutely.
In a way that I just don't.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it doesn't matter to me and you whether we look good or not because we're photographers.
Yeah, I'll say this is a rare thing for me to be seen in public.
So. Yeah, so... But if it was a thing, then we'd have to sort our shit out.
Yes.
We could not go around doing it like this. This is for sure. I'm currently wearing hiking trousers, waterproof boots, and a hoodie covered in dog hair, which is a strong look.
It is. It's a look.
But luckily, this is a podcast, despite it being on video as well. But it is a podcast, first and foremost. So I didn't get dressed today. Well, I did get dressed, but I have got clothes on. But didn't go smart.
But you're very regimented in that you have a pair of jeans, a very comfortable pair of shoes / boots and a black T-shirt. That's kind of your garb.
Yeah. I have one outfit. It does work well.
Because it's one less decision to make in the morning.
I just can't be doing with it. Black T-shirts suit me. So they look. But a black T-shirt looks better on me than any other T-shirt. So obviously, black T-shirt is the answer.
And again... It's tasteful, but back to the subject matter.
You wear a black T-shirt anyway.
Whereas your parrot Hawaiian shirt
Not so much. Bad taste is probably the final one I would land on here, with why photographers just completely stuff
it. And it's another thing that you can understand, you know, what's tasteful and whatever to a certain degree. But like creativity, there comes a point, a level, where it can't be taught. You just have to, have it or you don't. You know, in the same way that, you know, we've just had the Olympics. You know, there's certain genetically gifted athletes, and there's others that aren't. You know, so you just have to understand that that's the way the world works.
Yeah, but and I think just to add to that, like I always use sport as an analogy because I used to be in sport. You can be as genetically gifted as you like, but if you don't work hard, it's pointless.
Yeah.
But if you have no genetic gift, working hard also won't sort it for you. It's the combination of being genetically gifted and working hard.
Yeah.
Like, there's, you know...
Understanding that's your gift, and then...
And unfortunately, at school, we're taught that anyone can do anything they want with their lives, and that is not true. I cannot be an author of books. There's no amount of hard work that will get me past being really dyslexic and badly read. Like, I don't have the depth of knowledge of reading to be able to be good at writing. And that's never going to change.
No, I mean, you know, you can... articulate what you need to say.
Yeah.
But it would be better in your scenario to have somebody else write that story.
Yeah, but even then, like, you know, I'd mess it, like, I'm fine doing an 8-minute YouTube video. I can smash that out, but I don't script anything because I can't read from it. And also, I don't understand tense. And I understand it, but I get it wrong. So, you know, and you can't be good at everything, but I think everyone can be good at something.
Yeah, of course.
It's just finding that thing. I was quite lucky to find it eventually. After trying to be a violinist, a swimmer, a cyclist, a scientist, finally found photography. And that hopefully is the one.
Yeah, you found your landing and it stuck.
Yes, did take a while. Slow on the uptake.
Well, again, that came from understanding what you weren't going to be good at long term.
Yeah, it took me a while to realise each one that I wasn't
going
to make it.
You could still be on the violin, mate, you know.
Oh, thank God we're not.
That'd be down in Leicester Square.
That'd be painful away for everybody. Oh, busking away or being bussed away. I don't know. But there we go. That is the final episode of season one of the podcast. Hopefully there's a season two. We'll see what we can
fingers
do.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Maybe let us know in the comments if you've made it this far. What you think we should do. Patreon it or sponsorship.
Yeah. And obviously any suggestions of what, you know, the wider audience would want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And then maybe, I guess, just a case of, I suppose we just need to work out how much money we need to make it work. But more than we're currently getting, because YouTube's currently paying us a pittance.
Yes.
Oh, paying me a pittance.
For these specifically. You do quite well with your other videos. But
yeah, but not the podcast. Do you not like the long form?
And again, it's the one that takes the most amount of time and the most amount of effort with the least amount of reward.
Yeah.
So, you know, logically, again, if you're looking at your business critically, like what you do with anything, which part of my business is hemorrhaging cash and which part is making that book? It's like, hang on, if I do, in the time it takes to do two of these podcasts plus the editing, you could probably do 10 to 12 8-minute videos, I think.
Which make five times the income. And
same time spent, but much greater reward.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, is it all about the money?
No, and this was very much, as you know, very much of a ramshackle thing that we just decided one night, why don't we do this? Rob's in tomorrow, we'll set something up and see what happens.
Yeah, bought a second microphone because I'd only got one.
Yeah, you already had one, so and you had to buy the Vocaster too. So.
I did indeed.
So that was the only real expenses in terms of...
Yeah, it cost a couple hundred to set up.
And then we just figured it out, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Well, thank you very much for joining us for this series of podcasts. It's much appreciated, everyone watching it. We've got way more views than we expected. I was expecting a few hundred per episode rather than a few thousand. But yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah, no, and then thanks to you, obviously, for forcing me to be in front of a camera. I mean, again, if you were to look at episode one to today, I'm definitely more comfortable talking on camera now than I was before.
It doesn't take long, does it?
No. I mean, I'm not sure I'd ever want to do this myself full time.
No,
but, you know, it's
I don't
kind
think
of,
I would.
It's definitely an art to it. And I think you've seen that with, like, so many YouTubers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look at my first videos. They're horrific. But, you know, you just got to have no shame and just keep going until you...
Yeah, and actually, you know, because initially I think you try and hide your personality in case people don't like it, because let's face it, the internet is a cruel, cruel mistress.
It really is.
And then there comes a point you're like, meh, I am me and this is who I am, so, you know, like me or don't.
Yeah, I just don't care anymore. People hate me. It doesn't...
So I think that's the takeaway from all this, just, you know, be yourself.
Yeah, be yourself and don't care about anyone. Don't be yourself if you're a bad person, though. Try and fix that.
Yeah,
yeah. But yeah, and then, yeah, you'll be once again contractually obliged to be on camera.
Indeed, yes.
Nice one. See you later. Bye-bye.
Ciao for now.